It's time to experience the Synergy Connection Show with your host, Lucy Forsting.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another show with the Synergy Connection people, I'm going to say today. I have as a returning guest, Mark Anthony, and Mark has been on quite a few of my shows over the years. I love having him as a guest because he brings a true spirituality, I'm going to say, to the show. He is an attorney by trade, but the reality is he is a fourth generation medium and communicates with those that have passed away. So before we get started with our show today, which is in part understanding the broken heart syndrome, but also talking about grief in general and what happens to people that have lost loved ones as we approach the holidays. And here we are looking at a couple weeks from now. It's Thanksgiving, and of course after that, Christmas. And Thanksgiving is a week later than normal this year. And so it's going to push, you know, our holidays, kind of squish them together in some respects. And so we have all of these feelings about the holidays. And then we have mixed feelings about loss and what that has done to us maybe over this past year. So that's going to be our topic today. In addition, if you go to the website, which is synergyconnectionradio.com, all of the shows are archived there. So you'll find all of Mark's shows that I've had over the years, like I said. And you'll also find a link to Boomers Forever Young. And Boomers is a company that has basically helped with launching this podcast 8 years ago. They are a health and nutrition company. And their latest, I'm going to kind of introduce a brand new product that's coming out in just 2 weeks. But I've been talking about this gentleman named Eric Kurtz. And Eric invented Myotrol. So that was Myotrol. But we have a new one that he has just invented, and we're releasing it in 2 weeks. And it's called Collagene. It's spelled Collagene. And it looks like it almost is like collagen, but it's not. It's Collagene. And what it's going to do is totally rebuild knees and hips. It cushions, it rebuilds that cushioning, the cartilage that's in between your vertebrae, in between the bones in your knees, in between like where the hips are. If we can avoid surgery as much as possible as you age, it is to your benefit. Undergoing the knife at any time is not a good thing, but definitely not if you're over the age of probably 55 or 60. So this collagene, it's liquid. You just literally put a couple of drops in some water and that's it. It has no flavor and you will be on your way. And we have several people that have already tested it just to see what it was going to do for them. One gentleman who's 89 years old, looks like he's about 60, but he was not able to walk really very well at all without his wife's support. He's doing just fine. And they were looking at maybe having to have another knee replacement done. And so he's avoiding that. Please go to their website. We'll be posting things. You'll be able to read it. But again, the name of it is going to be Collagene. And his other product is Myotrol. And I think it would behoove everyone to read a little bit more about these particular products and how they can enhance your life and maybe allow you to stay healthy and vibrant much, much, much longer. All right, so here we go. Welcome back, Mark.
Thank you, Lucy. It's good to be here. And, you know, we're coming up on the holidays. And I like you said how this year, Thanksgiving is a week later than it normally is, because I always found there's never enough time between Thanksgiving and Christmas to get everything done. And now it's even less. Right. And some people call this time of year Stressmas instead of Christmas. And it doesn't matter what belief system. I mean, Hanukkah's in here and other belief systems, and whether or not you're religious per se, it's hard to ignore the holidays.
Right.
Turn on TV, there's Christmas specials, there's Christmas music, holiday music, and it puts a burden, if you will, on you to be happy and cheerful. And for those of us who've lost loved ones, particularly if it's a recent loss, the first holidays after the death of a loved one are, they just hammer you, and it's really, really hard. And so you're trying to survive, to get through all this when around you is all this happy, happy, happy Christmas, Christmas, Hanukkah, Hanukkah, all these things which just seem to intensify the pain and agony that you're going through.
I totally agree. It's hard to put on that happy face, holiday face, if you will, if your heart literally is not in the mood for that kind of happiness and joy and all of the things that we are told that we should be feeling during the Christmas holidays or even Thanksgiving for that matter, being thankful, for our health and wellness and having family around. But if you've got a person that's missing, it's more acute for sure. So, mentioning having your heart not in the right place. I do want to touch on the fact that we did mention this in a prior show, but I want to kind of springboard into a few things. So this broken heart is a
Yes.
real thing. It's a real syndrome. And like you said, Carrie Fisher, and her mother, dying within just 24 hours of one another. I mean, that is something that people need to be very much aware of. If they have a loved one whose spouse, we have a man that I know who his spouse of, I guess maybe 60 years, he knew her for over 70, but she's no longer in his life. And here we are coming up on the holidays, and he has his family, and he made it through that acute period of the 24 to 48 hours.
Right.
I think in part because, family was around him. And I do wonder, is the grieving person more likely to have this happen to them if they're spending a lot of time alone versus maybe with support all around them?
As usual, Lucy, you always give me really good questions, and that's a complex question with a lot of parts. So if we could, let me take it one step at a time. Broken heart syndrome. We've all heard songs and read poetry, stories, seen movies. I mean, if you've ever watched Lifetime movies, you see about people with broken hearts. And the truth of the matter is that broken heart syndrome is a real medical condition. And its technical term is tachocardiomyopathy. And what happens is with right after the death of a loved one, like you mentioned, actress Carrie Fisher, and the very next day her mother, Debbie Reynolds, died right after Carrie Fisher died. Football player, Doug Flutie, his parents died within a day or so of each other. And you see this all the time, and people say they died of a broken heart, and that's because they did. What happens with a lot of people, and it's most prevalent in women between ages 58 and 75, when a loved one dies, the surviving person, their heart actually is stunned. When something terrible happens and you feel it, that caving in sensation in your chest, well, this takes it to the nth degree. And so the left ventricle, one of the chambers of your heart, it's not only stunned, but it begins to swell with fluid, and you go into cardiac arrest, and it can be fatal. The reason it's called tachocardiomyopathy is because the way the left ventricle swells, it takes on the appearance of a tachotsubo, which is a Japanese octopus trap. I mean, it's an actual thing. If you look it up online, you can see pictures of a Japanese octopus trap and a human heart experiencing tachocardiomyopathy, you see the similarities. Now, when this happens, the person having it's going to start having heart attack symptoms. They'll have angina, chest pain, they'll have shortness of breath. You've got to get that person to the emergency room ASAP. This is a treatable condition. Doctors can treat it with beta blockers, with diuretics, and other medications. And here's the really fascinating thing about this, is it only ever happens once to somebody. Once you experience tacosubo cardiomyopathy, and once it's treated, it will not happen again. And I know it's a very, very rare and complicated, but when I say rare, I think it's only rare because it's only been maybe in the last 15 years that it's been accurately documented and analyzed. So if it's dealt with right up front, right away, it can be treated and there'll be no long-term damage of the heart. However, if it's not, it has an extremely high likelihood of killing you. So the reason that Lucy and I wanted to discuss this is for the people out there, whether you're a parent losing a child, a spouse losing your life partner, siblings, even people that lose a beloved pet that was the only being that they loved in this world, if the surviving person if starts to show these symptoms, get medical treatment immediately because you cannot waste a minute. This has to be dealt with right away to prevent a fatality.
You know, I can see that the average person could potentially just miss all of this too. You know, like grandma is just grieving,
Right.
and they wouldn't necessarily think that it was anything, number one, rare, but number two, fatal, because they would just make that assumption that while she's just, you know, grieving the loss of her spouse of 50, 60 years or something along those lines. And I can also see that the person that is experiencing it, if somebody said, we need to get you to the emergency room,
No,
the
I don't
reaction
need
is that,
that.
yeah, you know, it's okay. It's just, you know, I'm really horribly sad and just let me rest and, you know, let me be by myself. So that becomes an issue as well. And I wonder how many documented cases they have of death being caused by, you know, this broken heart syndrome.
I know it'd be nice to run the statistics. You know what? While we're here, let me give it a shot, okay?
I just can imagine that there are so many that, or somebody that maybe is going through this that might, gosh, you know, get in a vehicle, you know, to drive to the funeral home, to drive wherever they might be going, and maybe they have a heart attack, and you know, they're going to say that it's not caused by this necessarily, but the fatality was a heart attack.
So the statistics are about 1 to 2% of the people who visit a hospital for a suspected heart attack have broken heart syndrome. But what it says here is the true number is likely higher due to misdiagnosis. The condition is most common in women over 58, making up 90% of the cases, though it can occur in any demographic. So guys, if it starts happening to you, get to the emergency room, okay? And while the majority of patients recover, there's a risk of complications like congestive heart failure, cardiogenic shock, and stroke. So it can and will be fatal. So right after a loved one dies, if you start having shortness of breath and you're getting chest pains, assume the worst and get the treatment, okay? And the treatment, I mean, once you walk into the ER, they'll be able to take care of it right away. And the fascinating thing is once it's handled, it doesn't come back. And because this is such a unusual form of heart, I didn't want to call it, technically it's heart disease, but it's not a chronic condition. It's something that comes right out of all of a sudden, there hasn't been enough studies on it. So, my advice or our advice, and neither Lucy nor I are doctors, but I don't think we're going to be remiss if after the death of a loved one. If you start having chest pain and hard time breathing, get to the hospital. I think we're okay advising that.
I think so too. Oh my goodness. And I mean, as we, like you said, we've got Thanksgiving a little bit earlier this year, or later, I should say, not earlier, but we got it later this year, which crunches it right up against Christmas. And the stress must, as you said, with everybody trying to get everything done between the two, maybe traveling, maybe having family in for the holidays. The list kind of goes on and on and on, I'm sure. So if a loved one did die, let's say in the last year or two, and you're going to that person's home, or maybe they're coming to your home, what are some things that maybe you as a family member can do to assist, to help them kind of get through these times without making it difficult for everybody?
There's always that awkward sense when somebody who just lost a loved one, let the grieving person define the parameters of the contact. I've seen in my work with the organization Helping Parents Heal, there'll be parents who just lost a child, and other parents will come up and say, "You don't have to tell us anything. You can tell us as much or as little. Just know that we're here to listen." Because one of the worst things is someone who's grieving and people start cross-examining them. Well, how did they die? Were they sick? How do you feel? Don't do that to somebody. I mean, think about how you would feel and just say to them, "I'm very sorry for your loss. We know that you're going through something really painful. You can talk about it. You can choose not to talk about it. Whatever you want to do, we're here for you, man. We welcome you with open arms, okay? And we're so happy that you're here. So keep it light, keep it supportive. And then that person may start to open up. They may not. If the person sheds tears, I want to talk about tears for a moment. Tears of grief are chemically different than reflex tears. Reflex tears are like from pollen or dust. When you sneeze, it just it's a reflex to a stimuli that causes you to sneeze. Tears of grief, and it's been studied in USC, University of Southern California, also the Ramsey Center in Minnesota, and also a medical research center in Holland and other places, that tears of grief actually contain the neurotransmitters, the chemicals which cause depression. And so shedding tears of grief is the healthy thing to do. Also, crying helps to alleviate broken heart syndrome. Now, I'm not saying, oh, just cry and don't go to the hospital. Cry on the way to the hospital, okay? And I'm not being facetious or funny when I'm saying that. But tears of grief, they release the chemicals which cause depression. It activates the parasympathetic nervous system, which is why after a good cry, you feel worn out but relieved. So think of a can of soda. And the grief is when you shake it up, and then when you pop the top and let that pressure out, that's what crying does. And I work a lot with grieving fathers and grieving men because men have a real hard time crying. We have been socialized to suppress our feelings. The only socially acceptable emotion for men to display publicly is anger. Well, that's really worked well for human history, don't you think, Lucy? It's like Napoleon was always angry, Hitler, Putin's always angry. The thing is, guys, we have hearts, we have feelings, and we have tear ducts in our eyes for a reason. And a study by Harvard shows that women cry 3.5 times a month, men cry 1.9 times a month. Now, I don't know how you cry 0.5 or 0.9. I mean, actually, it's a statistic. But crying doesn't necessarily mean you're sitting there with protracted tears rolling out. It could be like that. It just hits you. It's one of those waves of grief. And I experience that. I admit I cry. I cry. I mean, recently was the anniversary of my father's passing. And I shed a couple tears. It didn't last real long, but the pain was all that intense. And the thing is, it's the healthy thing to do because suppressing that causes anger and rage, and that grief gets shifted into other, the only socially acceptable emotion for men is anger. You don't want to break down and be angry. And what I recommend for people, if you have to cry, especially guys, do it in your man cave, whether it's your garage or your den, or drive somewhere, park. Don't do this when you're crying, but I mean, when you're driving, park somewhere, let it all out. You'll feel better, and it helps you emotionally, physically, mentally, and spiritually.
Very, very true. One of the things when I was in graduate school was studying everything that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross had written way back then. And I did a program when I guess I'd been out of graduate school a couple of years, but I developed a program for funeral homes called Coping and Living Life. And it was based on that, that whether you're male or female, the emotions of grief are going to be the same. And one may just be more suppressed, like you said, because men are traditionally told they need to be tough and strong and carry on. And women are told just the opposite, that this is a difficult time and, they're much more supported. So, yeah, all of that is extremely true. If you were talking to somebody about prolonged grief, where this is something that has maybe gone on, how do you define literally how long you should be grieving anything? But if it's prolonged to the point that, they just are stuck, do you have any thoughts with that? I mean, is it possible for, I don't know, like the spirit of that individual, maybe they need to do some meditation that would allow the spirits to connect so they can let go and know that that spirit needs to move on as much as they need to move on.
Well, my first book, I've written three books, Never Letting Go, Evidence of Eternity, and The Afterlife Frequency. And all of them help people that are grieving. And my first book, Never Letting Go, was written specifically as a guide on the journey through grief. And the reason I selected the title, Never Letting Go, is because what you have to let go of is the pain and the agony of the death. But never let go of the love for the person who died. And there are some people who get into a profound state of grief where the grief takes on a life of its own and then becomes the life of the person grieving. And I'm not being critical of anyone who does this. You see, particularly with parents who've lost a child and they don't touch a thing in that child's room. Everything stays exactly the way it was, and in a way, it becomes a shrine to the child who has physically passed. And there's many ways of looking at that. And I don't tell anyone, "Oh, clear it out." I mean, there's some people, "Oh, clear it out, get rid of the stuff right away." It's like people, everybody's on their own timeline as to how they need to grieve. But if you get stuck in that tar pit of grief, counseling. Don't go through grief alone. There's grief share groups through churches, and then there's ones that are non-denominational. I mean, that are not faith-based, if that's what you want. Meditation, prayer, certainly contact through a medium like myself. Spirit contact can be an important therapeutic step in the journey through grief. Helps people understand that their loved one didn't disintegrate into nothingness. And when the spirit starts giving you messages about things going on in your life now and things that I couldn't possibly know, but they know, it gives a lot of people a sense of relief. And one of the things that I teach in my book, Never Letting Go, is that the objective of the journey through grief is not to get over it. Because you never will. And that's where I differ with a lot of grief counselors and psychologists. You have to let go. Don't let go. Hold on to the love for that person. Let go of the sorrow. Let go of the sorrow. hold on to the love. And it is through the acceptance of the death that you begin to find inner peace. And inner peace doesn't mean I'm all happy. It just means that you're learning to live with this. Another aspect is, in one of the most important lessons in Never Letting Go, is to teach people that your relationship transforms from one of a physical nature to one of a spiritual nature. And that's where communication through a medium to make contact with your loved one's spirit can be extremely empowering, very, very healing. I hear so many times, I want him here. I want her here. I want, you know, and I understand that. I get it. And that's going to go on for a while, but you've got to get to the point where you do realize their physical presence is no more, but their spiritual presence continues.
Very, very true. Having been a bereavement counselor myself, years ago, it was so, in a way, rewarding for them to begin to understand that they do carry that love, the memories, all of those things are still very tangible. And you can look around your home and you can remember, oh, I remember when we did this or we did that, or we got this particular piece of artwork or something, together. And so it's no longer something to be sad about, but it's something to celebrate the memories.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And on my website, which is afterlifefrequency.com, Afterlife Frequency is my latest book, so the domain name Afterlife Frequency. You can also go to neverlettinggo.com. You'll go to the same website. I have a section of my website called Grief Management, and it's free resources. And the Grief Management has a number of blogs, one of which is coping with loss at the during the holidays. One is for people who may not have lost somebody, but somebody close to you, whether it's a friend or a coworker or a relative. The 10 things to say to somebody in grief and the 10 things to not say to people in grief. Do not go up and say they're in a better place. Oh, you think you're saying the right thing and you're actually doing the opposite. Because for people who've lost a child, a spouse, a sibling, the right place is here with them. Okay. It's and so there's the suggestions of what not to say versus the things to say. What are things to say? As cliché as it may be, I'm so sorry for your loss. Okay, we all say if there's anything I can do, you can say, hey, is there any chores or things? Maybe I can run some errands from you. Sometimes just a hug is okay. One of the best things to do is bring up a happy story. You know, the thing I always liked about your mom, she always made me feel so welcome when I came to your house. She was such a good person. I just adored her. That's what you say, not, oh, well, he drank himself to death. Okay, let's not. And people say things like that. Oh, what? He was 80. Well, that's a good age. No. Or you'll meet somebody else.
Oh, that's a tough
Ooh,
one. That's a
that's a real tough one. Or you're young, you can have more children. You know, people say things like that, not intending to be cruel. They think they're helping because there's that awkward. Remember we were talking earlier about somebody who lost a loved one and there's an awkwardness. Okay. Instead, say, well, you know, Joseph was just such a great guy. Okay. He was really funny. He could play guitar better than that. You know, whatever it is, bring up something nice. Don't do the you'll meet someone else, whatever. And just say, look, it can even say, I don't know what to say. I wish I had the words, but I'm here for you.
I think that's a beautiful statement, actually, because no matter what we try to say, sort of rings shallow in many cases. And just being honest and saying, I don't even know what to say to you other than I'm here for you. I'm going to share one more thing not to say, because I've heard this said at funerals where a parent has died. And especially if there's a son, many people will say, well, now you're the man of the family. And that's a tough responsibility, you know, even if you were 18 or 19, but if you're 12 or 13, which was the case, that is a very tough act to follow, because now I can't be a child anymore. You know, I have to all of a sudden be a grown up and take care of things.
You know, Lucy, I'm glad you said that because that's really important. You know, it's hard enough you're coping with your loss of your parents, and all of a sudden, well, you're the head of the family now. And it's like, you know, this isn't the Sopranos or the Godfather. You know? And it just say that, you know, I know that your parents were loved you very much. That's a better thing to say. When all else fails, stick to love. And
Right, you can't go
I'm not being
wrong.
funny. Stick to love, you know.
Right, you can't go wrong with that. I've always, in fact, the book that I wrote, the way I ended is helping people understand that really the only reason that we're here on Earth as physical beings is because of love. If we can figure that one out, then we've got everything else kind of figured out.
Yes. And go ahead, Lucy.
Say anything else maybe that you want to add before the show is over for the day?
Yes, on my website, on the grief management, one of the blogs is entitled, there's two different blogs. One is Empowerment Through Being Powerless. And that's, I explain how the death of a loved one makes us feel so powerless. And when we realize there's certain things in our lives we can't control, we are empowered by acknowledging that we're powerless. The other one is today is not that day. And this is for the anniversaries of the death of a loved one. I just went through one last week, the anniversary of the passing of my father, and I had to follow my own advice and say, well, the calendar date may be the same, but today is not that day. And so I've written blogs on both of those, and many people have told me these blogs have helped them very much because you tell yourself today is not that day because you don't want to go back in that tar pit. And a lot of people, you know, feel that if I'm miserable and grieving, I'm somehow honoring my loved one. Do you really think your loved ones want you to go through that type of agony? Of course they don't. And that's what, and in so many readings I've done, people are just like, wow, they really do want me to feel better and be happy. So you can find out about all of these by visiting my website, afterlifefrequency.com. Also, you can find out about calling into my weekly show, The Psychic and the Doc. And I do readings for callers, and my co-host, Dr. Pat Basile, behavioral psychologist, she helps people understand the full impact of the messages. So you can find out about all those at afterlifefrequency.com. And for everybody that's facing the holidays without a loved one, at some point we all have to do this, but realize you're not alone. Reach out to family, friends, your faith community, counseling. Don't go through this alone. There are caring professionals, people, and friends who will help.
Thank you. I think that's an extremely important message to hear right now, because a lot of people are a little out of sorts with everything that's been going on within the United States as well as the world. And so it only compounds things when we have personal losses in addition to that. So thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Lucy. God bless.
Same to you, dear. All right, everyone. Well, please go out there and make this your best life. Check out Mark's other shows. All you have to do is scroll through. I think there's like 29 or 30 pages now of shows, but scroll through the shows and look for Mark's name. And you know, all of the shows, as far as I'm concerned, have been wonderful, enlightening things that we don't normally think about. And so I appreciate you, Mark. Have a beautiful Thanksgiving and a wonderful Christmas, and the same to all the listeners. And we will talk to you next week. Make it a good one.
Boomers Forever Young is really making a name for themselves as an exciting nutritional company with products that really work. People from all over the country are starting to take notice. Their whole person approach to health and wellness, combined with their unique array of powerful natural health products, are setting them apart from all the other companies in the nutrition industry. Their customers love the one-on-one free consultations and the results they experience. Sound a little too good to be true? Then go online to boomerboost.com today and sign up for a free consultation with a product specialist, or just give us a call at 1-800-861-4609. Again, that's boomerboost.com, or call 1-800-861-4609 to join the thousands already experiencing the benefits of Boomers Forever Young products.